Welcome, everybody, to the 412-411 podcast, where we talk everything local 412. I'm your host, Julian Mendez, and I'm excited. This is episode one with me. I got the reins over, and I'm extremely excited. I've been working with the UA for about 6 years now, and I'm still at the tip of the iceberg of everything that goes on here. So you're going to learn some bits. I'm going to learn some bits. And the whole purpose of today's show, the topic is apprenticeship standards. And I've got Mr. Ray Fujio here, who is the main training director. And if you can introduce yourself to the world, to 412, and a little bit about your backstory, your character makeup. Who are you, sir?
My name is Ray Trujillo, the training director for Local 412 and for Southwest Piping Institute. I'm retired military. I went through the apprenticeship program. I started late. I was 42 years old when I started. And I knew that if I was going to be on the job out here in the field with all these young guys, I had to earn my place. So I just had to try to out-hustle them. Eventually, because of my background in instructing with the military, I taught at Santa Clara, Stanford, and San Jose State Universities for military science. Once I was here and I turned out as a journeyman, I had the opportunity to teach plumbing and gas fitting at C&M Community College, and I did that for a couple of years. So I was lucky at the time. The training coordinator at that time was Chuck Schumann, and he basically gave my shot to be an instructor. And then once I finished up at C&M, Courtney Eichhorst, so the current business manager, who was the training coordinator at the time, brought me over to be his assistant, and the rest is history.
So your experience as U.S. Army influenced the way you train.
That's correct.
That's awesome.
Right.
So for those who might not be familiar, can you explain about the apprenticeship program?
The apprenticeship program is a guided and structured program that teaches apprentices the basics of their particular craft. We have plumbing, pipe fitting, and HVAC. Our welders turn out of the program as pipe fitters with welding endorsements to their licenses. Some people don't understand why we have to have related instruction. The thing is that a majority of the training is going to be conducted in the field. The journeyman is the primary instructor for that individual. I only have them for 7 hours a week. And if that's all I had them for 5 years, I still couldn't turn out a journeyman. So we're here to round out their knowledge in their particular craft.
And I do want to get into the apprenticeship standards, but if you can, walk us through the typical journey of an apprentice from enrollment to becoming a journeyman. Mm-hmm. And that one.
Okay. The candidate applies when we have an open enrollment. We notify everybody, particularly we send out mass emails to all the membership because a lot of them have friends, families, and relatives that want to get into this craft. They have to apply, and there is a new application procedure that went into effect this year from the UA. And what it's meant to do is to weed out those that really don't understand what this craft is about. And so once they put in their application and they've returned it by the deadline, their names and email addresses are sent up to APT Metrics, who will then generate logins and passwords for those individuals. So now part of the application process is they have to come in doing a proctored math assessment, and they also have to do what's called a journey assessment. So the math assessment is just meant to find out where they sit on with their math skills. It's not a discriminator. It's not something that if they can't pass it, they're not considered. It's just for us to find out where their math skills are at. The journey assessment is put together, and it's a video, and I posted it on our Facebook as well, that shows what the UA calls the good, the bad, and the ugly of the trade. A lot of people want to get into this crap because of the wages and the benefits. However, they don't truly understand the environment that our apprentices and journeymen work in on a day-to-day basis. So it's an it's basically interviewing apprentices across the country about their particular situations. And it kind of goes into, there's a female apprentice who's a single parent, and she describes how she's got to get up extra early so she can get, you know, her kids to school and that stuff. There's another situation where a guy says, yeah, I have to be up at 3 o'clock in the morning because I got a 2 hour drive to the job site. And it shows them the different working conditions and the amount of time that goes into being an apprentice, not just working during the day, but then attending classes two nights a week. So at that point in that assessment, they will decide if they want to continue the application process. And if they do, then those names will be forwarded back to us from the UA. If they choose not to, then we're informed that they, after viewing, you know, what our apprentices and journeymen go through on a day-to-day basis, that they don't want to do this. So it kind of weeds out those people, because right now we'll get people and we spend a lot of money on training, and it hurts when we got somebody who only sticks around for 2 months, 6 months. The worst one we had where the guy lasted a half a day and said, this is not for me. I had no idea I was going to be out here in the heat or in the elements and that kind of stuff.
How do you let them know to prepare them for that?
Well, there's a packet that they receive when they get their application, and it tells them about these assessments. It tells them, particularly on the math, it says, you know, there's lots of YouTube videos out there to bone up on your basic math skills. Of course, your addition, multiplication, subtraction, and division. But then it also tells them that you want to work on the basics on your fractions, you know, adding, multiplying fractions, that sort of thing. So that way they can kind of prepare. And like I said, it is not something that's scored on a pass or fail basis. It's just to see where they stand with their math skills.
An apprenticeship here at the UA, what is enrollment like right now? Is it pretty high? Are you looking? Are you currently, do you need more apprenticeship? What's the status of our local?
Well, normally we open the application window probably about once a year, because we have to deplete the ranking list, which is where all of those that have passed the interview process go onto a list. And as jobs as job calls come in that can't be filled with existing apprentices, then those job calls are kicked over to the training center. And then we start calling down that ranking list, and first come, first serve. Those that take it, they'll be removed off of the ranking list, and everybody moves up. Now, this last time in June, we opened up an application window for the first time in 13 months, and we had 260 applications that we handed out. However, there was a deadline for the 27th of the month, and only about 140 returned their applications. So those are the names that were sent to the UA APT Metrics Division to start getting their logins and IDs for those two assessments they have to do. So, a couple of years ago, the jobs were, I mean, they were coming fast and furious, and we actually did four application windows that year. When I first took over back in 2016, our total apprenticeship program was about 124 total across all of our schools. And as of today, we're sitting at 404. And there's more work on the horizon as well. So as we deplete those names, once we get down to about 40 or 50 left on that ranking list, that will trigger us to go ahead and open up another application window.
Okay. The reason I ask is because 412 has such high standards and unique standards that they carry differently than everybody else. One more before we get into this, I would love to know if somebody listening, they're driving. Our whole point of this podcast is so when people are driving, they can learn about their local.
Right.
I want them to know that they can point this out to their nephew, their grandson, their grandkid, their granddaughter, everybody. Mm-hmm. What type of person fits this role, mm-hmm, to weed them out, to, yeah, go, this is the type of person it is, mm-hmm, and what do they need to actually, you mentioned math. Mm-hmm. That blows people away. They think they're just, sure, going to be grabbing the tools and going at it. And the right. They don't realize that there's so much math involved.
Exactly.
And that weeds out tons.
Yes.
So if they're driving right now to their job site, they're going, oh, my nephew fits this perfectly. Mm-hmm. What is that ideal apprentice for you?
Well, they must be a minimum of 18 years old because they're uninsurable on the job site otherwise. And then the only other requirement is they have to have a high school diploma or GED. Some people say, do they have to have their Social Security card with them and that stuff? The school is only talking about the school. When it comes to that kind of stuff, that is done by the contractor and by the local union hall during dispatching.
And then the next step for them to say, hey, come down to the training center, mm-hmm. go to the website, contact a phone number. Mm-hmm. Which one do you prefer? Which one's the method?
Well, normally what we do is because we don't have application windows open all the time.
Okay.
What we do is we let people know, and they can tell their families, friends, and loved ones the same thing. If we don't have, if we're not currently handing out applications, they can call our office the last week of each month, because it's the committee, the training committee, that will give me the approval to open a window or not. So they usually meet the third week of the month. So at that time, if they call, then the people at the front office will tell them, sorry, we're not handing out applications for the following month. Call us again at the end of next month. Or if we are going to hand out applications, like we made the announcement for June, they will let that individual know this is the date and this is the time. Now, it's a very short window. It's usually only for one day. And for 4 hours. And like I said before, in 4 hours, we handed out 260 applications. So we cannot get so over inundated that we can't even get them all interviewed and that stuff. So we put a 4-hour limit on it. And we usually average about 180 applications. But this particular time, because it was 13 months in passing, we got overloaded. But again, there's a deadline for them to turn that in. And that was not the case before, but now with this new interview process that we're going through with the UA, you know, there has to be a deadline on when those applications are turned in. And, the only other thing we tell them is that, you know, you're not going to be, you know, you may be in a service truck and you think that's all well and good, but you talk to any of our HVAC guys working as a service tech. And they'll tell you, when everybody else is nice and cool in the building, they're on the top of the roof sweating, and that sun is beating down on them. And the same thing in the wintertime. They're up on that roof. It's cold. That wind is blowing. So it's not an easy job. And these jobs can get very technical, particularly with the HVAC. There's a lot of science involved in that. So if you want to go HVAC, then you need to have a pretty good head on your shoulders and be ready to get into those books. You know, and when you talked about the math, well, as plumbers and pipe fitters, you know, when people see these pictures of these elaborate piping rooms that have been piped, pipes seem like they're running everywhere, there's a method to that madness, and it takes math to figure out, you know, how to get those things installed. You know, learning how to do, you know, you're doing algebra and trig to do that. And when I talk to a lot of schools, the counselors are kind of blown away that that's the level that we're at. But then when I tell them about, you know, that pipe just doesn't fit where it fits just by chance, it's because there was a lot of math that went in there, and it takes time to do that, to learn that.
So you get a lot of apprentices from high school. College might not be the fit for them. Sure. Is there a pathway or any benefits if somebody's coming from the military side into this?
Sure. There's a direct entry portion that I'll talk about when we get to the standards.
Sure.
And military vets, we give them a 6-month credit to come into the program. So they will not come in as a 1.0, they would come in as a 1.5. Now, those that have completed a certificate or a degree in a trade, in one of our trades, through a trade producing school that's recognized, they can get 1-year credit. Even those that attend courses and complete the course at Job Corps, they have the ability to come in with credit as well. There's another way for those that, let's say, is an individual that has some experience out there, maybe he's been doing some plumbing work for, you know, 6 months or a year or whatever. They can petition to go before the examination board and they will do an assessment on them, a written and hands-on assessment, and then they'll determine at what level they would enter the program if accepted.
Okay, now, apprenticeship standards, a topic of today. I know we, I appreciate that a great deal because at the end of the day, we want to grow the local, we want to have a healthy people come in, and we want the right fit of person and to let them know what to get into before they even hear the standards.
Right.
Because they got to be the right fit there.
Correct. Yeah.
So if you could tell us a little bit about the apprenticeship standards that you were.
Okay. So the apprenticeship standards is a set of guidelines that that governs us on how we run an apprenticeship program. Now, in this case, we're talking about registered apprenticeship programs. Registered programs are registered with the state in which they reside. And it's a blueprint for what we will and will not do as far as operating the program. There's a few parts we'll talk about here pretty soon, but there's a certain way that we have to do applications. There's a certain way that we have to do work processes that are concerning the on-the-job training forms, how many hours they have to have in each one of those skill sets that are listed. And those skill sets are basically listed by the Department of Labor through ONET. ONET is a national database that tells you what the skill set should be for a plumber, skill set for a pipe fitter, skill set for an HVAC technician, and any other trade that's out there. It's an extenuous list, but it tells you what the craft is. In the basically the scope of their duties when they're in that particular occupation. Now, on registered apprenticeships, that means it is a formal program that is overwatched by either the Department of Labor or by the State Apprenticeship Council. So there's different; it varies from state to state, and we'll talk about that here in a second.
You have different standards for our local here at 412?
That's correct. Because depending on what state you're in, you have to have standards. So in the state of New Mexico, the whole territory of New Mexico is covered by the State Apprenticeship Council, which is overwatched by the apprenticeship division of the state. In other states, you have what's called a DOL state. So it's actually the Department of Labor that directly governs those programs.
Different parts to our standards that you were mentioning?
Yeah. So first, let me just talk a little bit about what DOL means. When it say they're a DOL state, like in our case, we have to have standards for every territory that's in our jurisdiction. So we happen to have New Mexico and nine counties around the El Paso area. So I have to carry New Mexico standards and Texas standards. Texas happens to be a DOL state, which means they're governed by the Department of Labor, and there's a minimum standard for the operation and administration of the program that's laid out by DOL. And that's usually it's a standard, what we call a boilerplate, and it is a template on how to run your program. Now, New Mexico happens to be a SAC state. It has a State Apprenticeship Council, which means they will take the DOL boilerplate, those minimum standards, and they will add more requirements as they see fit. They cannot take away from DOL standards, but they can add to them. So I have to deal in Texas with DOL, and here in New Mexico, I deal with the SAC council. And so, the different parts that we're talking about on a set of standards, and this is common to both SAC and DOL, is that there's a base document. And again, that's called the boilerplate. That just has the basic day-to-day operations and lays out policies and procedures that we're going to follow so that we can be recognized as a true apprenticeship program. This also helps when your program is being looked by Department of Higher Education, accreditation bodies, that sort of thing. So besides the base document, then you have a bunch of appendices. And those appendices will vary, the number, I should say, will vary based on how many crafts your particular program has. So here in our state, we have Appendix A's, which is the work processes for our plumbing program. And what that includes is the term of the apprenticeship, in our case, 5 years, the ratio of journeymen to apprentices, the wage scale, work process scale, which is the breakdown that we use for how many hours are required for a particular skill set. And that's where the OJT form, for many of us that went through the program and those that are currently going through, every month they have to turn in that OJT form while you're an apprentice. And you have to log so many hours in these different skills by the time you turn out as a fifth-year apprentice and become a journeyman. Then Appendix B is that same exact thing, but it focuses on the pipe fitting program. Appendix C, the same thing. It focuses on the HVAC program. Appendix D is the apprenticeship agreement form that all the apprentices go through when they first are indentured as an apprentice. This is an agreement that they say that, you know, I am going to be a part of this apprenticeship program and follow all of the guidelines that are set forth. Appendix E is the affirmative action plan, and that we have to state how we plan to recruit to ensure that minority populations are equally represented. And in our case, every month I report to our SPI training committee what our current demographics are. And so I take the available workforce in New Mexico that's laid out by the New Mexico Department of Workforce Solutions, and I match that up against my current population. So let's say it says there's 2% of the available workforce in New Mexico is African American. Well, then I want to make sure I got at least 2% represented in my program. And the same thing for Asian Pacific Islanders, Native Americans, Hispanic. And for years now, we have met or exceeded the available workforce in those minority demographics. The one that I'm really trying to work on, and it's been a long time, is trying to get a minimum of 10% women in our programs. Currently, New Mexico, 51% of the workforce is women. And when we're trying to man this work, is if you're not going after women to get in this program, that's more than half of the available workforce. But because of the nature of this job, a lot of women aren't really attracted to it. And some of it's just because it's a heavily male-dominated industry. But we are getting more women that are coming into the program, and they're spreading the word. They're more than capable of doing this job and getting the benefits and the pay that come with it. And in our being in the union, is there's no disparity amongst, well, it's a female, she's going to earn less than a male. Every apprentice at their certain wage scale is going to get it across the board. It doesn't matter whether you're a man or a woman. So the affirmative action plan, we haven't had to do much on that because I report that to the state, and they're extremely happy with our demographics that we got now. Appendix F talks about the selection procedures, how we are going to select apprentices to come into the program. And so like we said before, you have to have a minimum of 18 years of age, and you have to have that high school or GED. It also discusses the application procedures, the procedures that we're going to use to do the interviews. It also lists direct entry criteria. Like we talked about, those people that have gone to a trade producing school or are a veteran or have gone through, a pre-apprenticeship, that kind of thing, that how we're going to bring them in instead of bringing them in as a based 1.0 apprentice. It also talks about the tradesman to apprentice. And so what that is, if our audience doesn't know what that is let's say a contractor has found some person that they really think has potential. They can sign them in as a union member as a tradesman. Now, a tradesman is not supposed to be doing any work that an apprentice would do. Now, the way the standards are written is that after 30 days, that contractor can request that they be brought in direct entry into the apprenticeship. And so what that requires is they have to have a letter from management saying that, you know, they think this is a great individual and they're willing to take them on. It has to have a letter from the journeyman that says they would be a great asset to Local 412. And the contractor has to submit payroll for at least those 30 days without a break. So The contractor does not have to bring him in 30 days. That's just the bare minimum. They can work this guy for 6-8 months and then decide. But at that point, once that I've received all of those documents, I take that to the SPI training committee, and we go ahead and then bring them in as an apprentice. Now, our audience may wonder, well, how many slots does that contractor get? Well, the way the standard is written is that it is a one-for-one. So let's say, for instance, one of our contractors, like Miller Bonded, they have to have a slot for them to use that. And what I mean by that is that they have to take at least one apprentice off the ranking list, which that's a 1.0. And every time they take one of those off there, they get an apprentice, tradesman to apprentice slot. And let's say Miller Bonded had one slot, and they have somebody they want to transfer as an apprentice. Well, maybe next week they call us, we got another one we want to transfer. Well, they can't do that until they take another brand new apprentice off the ranking list, and then they will get another slot. And so the next thing is we've got, let's see, I kind of lost track where we're. Okay, so now we're on Appendix G, and that's the employer acceptance agreement, which means it's a document that every employer must sign, and they must sign this document for each one of the crafts that they have. So let's say they only have plumbers and pipe fitters. Well, they will sign an agreement for the plumbers and for the pipe fitters. And that agreement says they understand the apprenticeship program's rules and they will follow all of the program guidelines that are out there. And if they, maybe they only have HVAC, because maybe it's only, maybe like JCI, then they only have to sign an agreement with the HVAC portion. So those are, and maybe in the future we can go a little bit more in depth into some of these appendices, because they can get really in depth. But that's just kind of the overview of that document.
Well, yeah, we talked about the minimum standard to operate the apprenticeship program, the benefits of being a registered program. Do you want to touch on that a little bit?
When you're a registered program, one of the biggest benefits, besides being recognized as an institution of higher learning, not to be confused with being recognized by the Department of Higher Education as a formal higher learning, and which we have done, and we can talk about that at another podcast. But the biggest impact that it has is not just in the quality in the delivering of your related instruction, but also funding is a huge piece. You cannot get state or federal funding without being an approved registered program. And so the two main ones that we deal with here is the Apprenticeship Assistance Act, which is AAA funding, and the state will give us so much money per hour when a student is sitting in the classroom. Now, it's been pretty low for the past few years, and thanks to Brother Courtney, you know, and Local 412 being at the forefront fighting for more money, that's what helps us run our program to keep our members' costs low. So, for example, last year we were getting $2.10 for every hour that an apprentice is sitting in class. And that's nowhere near the operating costs. And so they went and they fought, and you probably heard about House Bill 5. And so right now, as we're moving into the next school year, we'll be getting $3.50 per hour. And it may go up even more before classes start. So that's one of our main funding sources. We have another one, which is called PWAT, or the Public Works and Apprenticeship Training. This money is given to apprenticeship programs who have contractors that bid and win public works job. Employers have to register their apprentices that are going to be on those jobs. And this is a huge chunk of money. We only get that one time a year. The AAA funding we get quarterly based on our attendance.
Well, this is huge. This is that. Now, one last thing before we go into some benefits and opportunities that I want to ask you about.
Mm-hmm.
The cost for it.
So when we talk about keeping the members' costs low, let's first talk about the apprentices. The apprentices only pay $280 a year for every school year. That's all they're going to pay. That is a material and book fee, which still doesn't cover the amount of materials that they use. For example, just 2 years ago, just for the soldering and brazing portion of the first year apprentices, we had spent over $30,000 in copper. So then when you start looking at the cost of materials that has gone up exponentially over the years, it takes a lot of money. And so if we can get someone else to pay for that, that keeps that apprentice cost down low. And, you know, for our apprentices that have only been here, sometimes it seems like $280 is a lot. But if you've ever been to college and you bought one or two college textbooks, that far exceeds that.
Right.
You know, they pay way more than that. And then also, of course, like we said, it's the materials. Now, when I try to compare, when I'm traveling around the country and talking to other apprenticeship programs that are union, there's apprenticeship programs out there where they're paying, their apprentices are paying well over $500 a semester. So they're paying over $1,000 a year for their classes. Now, that's not to be confused with registration fees. When you're in a registered program, you don't pay registration fees. You're not allowed to charge for that. And that's where this other money that comes through is helping to run that program, so we don't have to raise that cost. To put it in perspective for you, when I was an apprentice, it was $200 a month, and it's only gone up $80 since. And because Brother Courtney is up there constantly pushing for more money, more avenues to bring in funding, it keeps that cost down for them. But now, let's talk about the journeyman cost. For our journeymen, there is no cost for them to come in and take med gas or orbital welding or any of the backflow. At other locals, they're being charged for that. Let's take, for example, welding certs. There's other locals out there that you have to pay, you know, roughly $200 or $300 to take that weld test. And if you fail it, well, then you're going to have to pay that again when you come to retake it. All we ask of them is if they sign up for the class, that they show up. Because one of the problems that we have is people will sign up for the classes and we turn others away because the class is full and then they don't show up.
Right.
But they're taking it for free. Backflow and some of the other locals, they're paying almost $300 just to take the backflow course and to test. So all of those come at a cost where we're trying to use other avenues to bring in funding. So our journeymen and apprentices, when they take these outside classes outside of the apprenticeship program, they're not fitting a huge bill for that. There's some that are even charging booth time. If you want to get a weld cert, you want to just come in and practice, there is a booth expense. And, you know, if you're going to use rod...
We don't have that here.
We don't do that here.
Okay.
No, everything's free. And most of the feedback I get is from our travelers that come in because they come. There's some locals that will not let travelers take any classes at all at the training center. And then there's other ones that will allow them, but they're going to charge them for that. You know, and here, locally 412, we're like, hey, we're all part of the same UA family, you know, so they're allowed to take classes here. And a lot of them are so excited that they don't have to pay these exorbitant prices for their classes. They sign up for everything they can while they're here. And so all of this funding, this AAA funding and the public works is just a piece. And Sister Joan, with Courtney's vision, is we're going after every other funding avenue that we can. Every grant that we qualify for, she's out there chasing that money. And for example, you know, we needed to expand Española. And she was able to get us a grant for $1.2 million just for Española. So we are spending about $900,000 in equipment that is earmarked specifically for Española. And then the remainder is to do upgrades, you know, build walls, you know, upgrade the facility and that kind of stuff. So again, our members, you know, they have contributions to help run the school, but we don't want to keep charging them. There's other locals where their contribution rate is, you know, $5, $7 an hour, you know, and ours are not even close to that. But, you know, because of the vision of the business manager, it's like, look, if we can get other funding avenues to pay for this stuff, then it doesn't hit our pocketbook of our members.
Right.
So,
see, what I have here is we should label this apprenticeship standards episode,
mm-hmm.
because this will save a lot of time for a mm-hmm. lot of people to even see if they qualify, what they
sure
the exact standard is
mm-hmm. within
it. Yeah. But one of the things that I figure I think is going to need its own podcast mm-hmm. are the key benefits for the individuals who choose to enter the apprenticeship program.
Sure.
Because that right in itself, we didn't even touch on.
Right.
We're telling them the bare bones, like these are the standards.
Right.
But can you just briefly explain some of the benefits someone has and up on and or opportunities they have for going to become an apprenticeship here?
Well, there's a lot of opportunities out there to get into this craft, whether you're union or non-union. And I say that about, you know, sheet metal and electrical and iron workers and that kind of stuff. But each local union has different benefits that go with those memberships. You know, and when somebody comes into this program, I get asked constantly, especially when I go talk to high school students, is that, hey, you know, I don't have any experience. Do I need some experience to come in? And it's, you don't need any experience. That's what that's what apprenticeship does. It trains you from the ground up. And so they come in, right now, roughly, if I can remember, it's about a little bit over $18 an hour starting on our lowest scale, with no experience. There's programs out there where they have to buy their own tools. They're not required to buy tools to attend the courses. And our union contractors provide them tools on the job. So that's another expense.
They're not going into college debt
right
immediately for this.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. And there's also, of course, the healthcare benefits, which we have. It's considered a Cadillac healthcare plan. You know, your deductibles are extremely low. There's some other programs that I've seen on the non-union side where they have a deductible for a single person is like $1,200 a year, you know, and for us it's $300.
Mm-hmm.
And then for a family out there, it gets to be more and more. Well, for us, it's $600 for a family. So, you know, we've had some apprentices that have gotten, had some really huge medical bills because, you know, their family member has a problem or whatever, and it would put them in financial destitute. But having this healthcare benefit is extremely important. And it may not seem important to a lot of apprentices who are single. You know, and when I was that young, I thought I was bulletproof too.
Right.
But you get that first hospital bill and don't have insurance, and then reality smacks you in the face.
Right.
So they have that there. And of course, they have the vision and the dental that goes with it too. But there's also scheduled pay raises. So it's not like the apprentice has to guess, well, what do I have to do to get my next pay raise? The pay raise is based on the amount of hours that you're working in the field. So roughly every 800 work hours in the field qualifies you for your next pay advance.
Wow.
And it's not just a nickel or dime. We're talking about almost a dollar an hour every 6 months. So when I talk to students and they start hearing that, that's what attracts me because of that money and how fast they can get to it. You know, and by the time they turn out as a journeyman right now, they're making high 30, low $40 an hour. But what they don't understand is that we work for that.
Right.
And it is not an easy job. And all of us that have gone through an apprenticeship program, and even those that haven't, and they're part of 412, they work their butts off out there every day. And I mean, it's hard work. So we earn every bit of it. And sometimes the high school counselors out there, because I'm mainly a plumber, but I also carry my pipe fitter's license, and they're just blown away on how much a plumber makes.
Right.
And they said, I don't understand how you make that much. And I said, I'm not a plumber that walks around with a plunger and a pipe wrench. You know, right. We're doing brand new construction, complex calculations. And then I start laying out those calculations for some of these high school counselors and teachers. And they're just blown away at what it takes to do this job.
Absolutely.
And a lot of them say, hey, I got into the wrong trade.
Yeah.
Because they are so far in college debt.
Right.
And we even have people that, and this is how saturated the market is out there with people with degrees, is we get people that have bachelor's degrees
right.
applying for this program. And we even had one that had a master's, and he was an archaeologist. And when he came in to interview, I asked him, so why are you here?
Right.
He said, well, there's no jobs right now for archaeologists, and you know, UNM isn't hiring. And I kind of jokingly said, well, we do digging here, but we don't do that kind of digging.
Right.
And, you know, but, you know, the thing is, when I see somebody like that come through, I know they're not going to last long. They're just trying to find something to hold them over to let, you know, UNM hires or whatever. But the market is so saturated with people with degrees that they are having to start taking jobs that don't even require a degree just to stay employed. So, and they're doing that, and they've racked up all this college debt, and they got to pay it back. Where our people, they come in, there's no college debt, $280 a year, and you're making really good wages. The other thing is the retirement.
It's a career, not a job.
Yeah. They get a 401k, which there's a lot of plumbing outfits out there that give a 401k, but those guys have to pay it off their check. And I tell them, well, ours don't. That's contribution. And then I say, you know, what about a pension plan? And they laugh at me, and they say, nobody gets pension plans anymore. And I said, our people do. So there's a lot of things that the non-union side tries to disparage people from joining the union, but a lot of that is just stereotypes, and they don't understand the benefits. And so that's why when I'm at Home Depot and I see those other competitors out there, non-union, their trucks are parked there, I'll wait till they come out, and then I'll have a conversation with them.
Right.
And they say, well, I'm making just as much an hour as you are. And I said, well, you're close in that time. And I said, yeah, you're pretty close. But then we start going into the benefits, and they're having to pay that off of their check. So they're not really getting that per hour because they're having to turn around and pay some of that money back to get the benefits that they got. And the benefits are nowhere near what ours are anyway.
Well, the main goal of today's podcast is a standalone so you can save people a lot of time so they can understand the standards.
Yeah.
That was huge. I appreciate all the time you've given us today and telling us the benefits and the opportunities and who it fits for.
Sure.
If you can close on one thing, I would love to hear the future of where you see your school going. And what's the outcome? Just give us a little what you're working on currently.
Well, you know, the vision that myself and Courtney had when we both took our new jobs in 2016 was to grow this local. And we've been doing that. And we've got a lot of big jobs that have come on, and that's why we've grown so fast. We anticipated growth, but not at the rate that we did. But there's still more jobs coming up down south, some jobs that are maybe happening up north. So the growth is just going to continue. Maybe not at the accelerated pace that we have in the last 2 years, but it's going to continue to grow. And I just think that if there's new people out there that are considering this craft, you know, it's a career, like you said. It's something that you can bank on for your retirement. And I tell everybody, you know, when you're young, you don't think retirement's a big deal. But you start hitting that 40 years old, and you're like, holy smoke, you know, retirement's right around the corner, and I don't have anything built up. So even though our young apprentices aren't looking that far ahead, our local union is looking ahead for them. So they're contributing to those retirements for them. So that by the time realization hits them, they're like, oh, okay, so I'm not as bad off as I thought I was, and I can actually contribute more. Because what we want is our members to retire and truly retire. We don't want them to, you know, they only get a little bit of retirement, now they got to go get a job as a Walmart greeter or something else to augment their income. And Social Security, you know, the amount that you get for Social Security, it's hard to sustain being in retirement at that, you know, limited income.
Fixed income and cost of living is just
exactly
one of those things.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, if you can, tell the listeners where they can learn more. If apprenticeship or someone in their family or someone they know to learn more, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
They can shoot me an email at ray@jtc412.com. They can also call us, you know, at 505-256-9257 to get some more information. If they already know what trade they want to get into, say they're interested in being a welder or a plumber or HVAC, then we'll put them in contact with that coordinator who oversees those programs.
I appreciate that.
Okay.
Ray,
right.
Sir, thank you for your time, for joining us on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Everybody, tune in again. Please share these podcasts. You can consume them. If you don't listen to it all on your drive to work,
pause it, come back to it.
Thank you again to Ray Trujillo for joining us in today's 412 podcast. And a reminder, your general member meetings are on the second Friday of every month at 7 o'clock, right at the hall. The apprenticeship council meetings are the same night, beginning at 5:30. We do have some news coming up. The big giant 412 golf tournament is set for September 20th. You'll be seeing a lot of signage there. There's a great grill up in the front for a giveaway and raffle. More on that coming up. Thank you again for tuning in. Drive safe, and we'll see you guys next time. Cheers.
It's the 412-411.